The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program. Welcome to all listeners, including all the new listeners that will be tuning in today. Thank you for listening to your friends who've recommended that you tune in. It's very exciting times here as well in Australia. And as you just heard in the news there from Patrick Henningsen, that Elon Musk has revealed that Twitter interfered in the 2020 and likely 2022 midterm elections. These are truly astonishing developments. And it means that you, the listener, are not going nuts. You've just been gaslit for the last however many years it's been since this fiasco, this stealing of the planet has been going on. Russiagate was the smokescreen and projection, a term we all learnt way back in 2016, 2017, where you accuse others of which you are guilty, is all coming to the fore. We will have our own breaking news this hour in around about 15 minutes time, or perhaps a little shorter. Kate Shouten, in full disclosure, Kate was my campaign manager for my campaign when I ran for the United Australia Party for the seat of Paterson in the federal election in May. I met Kate on the tour. She comes from the establishment. She knows absolutely everyone in the business. And it made sense to me to have someone help me out on the campaign. Kate's been in Victoria this week, and what she has discovered out of the seat of Mulgrave will blow your minds. This will be a preliminary report. There will be much more to come from it, but you will get it first here on TNT Radio before anywhere else in Australia. She's had permission from the appropriate people to come on, and she can give us some very, very important information soon. I can't wait. From the 2007 film Zeitgeist that many, many of you have seen, I'll never forget the very, very simple slogan that authority is not the truth. Truth is the only authority. And the Constitution is written to protect the people from the government, not the government from the people. So why do governments always push for more power and not less? Shouldn't it be that they become more efficient and as the representative of the people and therefore the taxpayer, it should be like a sign of success, a sign of achievement that they come out and they say, well, this year, we're spending less overall as a government. Our bill last year was $1 trillion, and this year it's only going to be $995 billion. We've saved the taxpayer $5 billion. That should be the measurement, not the other way around, that we need more government. Govern me harder, daddy, as we've all seen those memes circling on social media. This would make sense. So today we're going to explore this exact issue as it pertains to the election in Victoria. And some anomalies have appeared in what is considered by authority as an absolute. That is, in our elections, that they are absolute and cannot be questioned. And then within an election, what happens when in any seat you get to 50% of the vote plus one? That would mean an automatic victory. Well, that's how they're saying it is in Victoria. However, it's become very, very grey and very, very murky. So has Australia, with its impeccable record of honesty, been corrupted? And why are we not trusting our elections in a democratic country? Certainly came out in the federal election. There was lots of mutterings. In my own seat of Paterson, it was reported on 2GB radio when a lady rang up and spoke to Ben Fordham that her husband had found a collection of ballots in a rubbish bin at his work in Port Macquarie, almost 150 kilometres north of the electorate of Paterson. How is this possible? And I could actually see my name on the ballots in the photographs shared across mainstream media at the time. You could also see the tearing off the white of the paper that these were official ballots and not forgeries, although some of the ballots had different colours, so there was the mixing in of real and photocopied on green paper forgeries. So what's going on? The Australian Electoral Commission said, well, it doesn't alter the outcome, so we therefore won't investigate. And this is why, when there is so much dubious activity going on, we feel so incredibly disenfranchised in the system of so-called democracy when it is we don't even have our authorities even listening. But don't wear a mask out in public in a park, and the same authorities will order a policeman to come and fine you $500, $1,000, $5,000, whatever they decide at the time and in whatever state, only, would you believe, for those fines to entirely be ruled invalid. So they don't mind stepping on your toes when it's okay, but when we step on theirs, goodness me, they run and they run and they run. Well, there is so much more that we're not being told, and as much as of our authorities will not answer, but not anymore. And that is why we are here at TNT Radio. So are you enjoying listening to us at TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, Getter, or Twitter, and help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You're home for the news.
They do a great job of breaking down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jeremy Beck, one of our news producers, is here right now to report on a different story, and this one blows my mind, Jeremy. France has no more weapons to send to the Ukraine. What's going on?
Yes, Jason, this report that France has run out of weapons for Ukraine came from Politico, which cited an anonymous source. Off the record, the French admit that they can't give more weapons to Ukraine due to the state of their own supplies, the outlet said on Thursday. It added that Paris hopes to make up for it with civilian aid. But to top it off, Jason, most NATO members have also run out of weaponry to give to Ukraine. Now, France is seeking to organise a conference for Ukrainian resilience this month, according to the Politico report. Last month, the New York Times reported that smaller NATO members have exhausted their potential in terms of supporting Ukraine with weaponry, with at least 20 of the EU's 30 members apparently being pretty tapped out. At the time, the newspaper said that only larger allies, including France, Germany, and Italy, could maintain or increase arms shipments. But now France has run out dry. So who knows, Jason, France may now send blankets to Ukraine to keep the population warm over winter. It'd be probably much more useful.
Indeed. And we see that Macron himself has arrived at the White House and is waving to the crowds next to Joe Biden. And now she's been renamed again to Dr. Jill Biden as she's setting up the Christmas trees at Christmas. It is all theatrical at this point. So one wonders what Macron is doing over there in the United States at this stage. Is he asking for more money, or is he questioning what happened to his cut from the FTX debacle in all of this? Because it seems that without weapons and without money, NATO is absolutely useless. And it also highlights for mine when Trump came out early in 2017 in his presidency, And he talks specifically about NATO and these countries not paying their way in all of it. It just seemed that the United States just had a big credit card that kept getting pushed out in terms of its limit, and therefore was probably the cover story for all of the clandestine black opportunities that happen in these cases to keep the great big military industrial complex going. One thing we're seeing, though, in real time, if Politico is quoting unnamed sources here, then there really is something going wrong if they are prepared to give away this massive secret that France is running out of resources in the so-called war in Ukraine.
Yes, and I think it would be quite a high-level contact for Politico to go with this story. It seems that this is the last-ditch effort of this globalist empire. They're putting everything into Ukraine, and we've reached the stage where they've got not too much left. And you see that in the US supplies of military equipment. For example, on Wednesday, the US Army announced that a $1.2 billion contract to produce 6 National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems for Ukraine has been awarded to Raytheon, but it has an estimated completion date of 28th of November 2025. So, you know, how long do they plan to keep this war dragging on for? But the point is that why aren't they sending weaponry now? Well, they just don't have that much. So they're draining their supplies. And already United States has pumped in $19.8 billion worth of military aid, including sophisticated hardware, high mobility artillery, rocket systems, M777 howitzers, combat drones, everything. So look, when NATO runs out, when the United States runs out, it's looking pretty sad. And look, if they're prepared to have these contracts going on for years and years, they intend to keep the war dragging on for years and years. But in terms of military hardware, it seems like there's not much to defend NATO countries or United States. So, I mean, what's France got to defend itself now?
This is the scary part of it, isn't it? Because they've admitted without saying anything that they're actually vulnerable for an attack. But of course, they would, being a NATO country, it would only just spark World War III at this point. But then that's the next stage. If this was to explode to become World War III one way or another, and we only saw an attempt at doing that with the missiles that ended up in Poland only, a week ago or so, one wonders what France is meant to do. And of course, Germany's reporting something similar, that they're very low on all sorts of resources. Europe is in the biggest mess we've ever seen in our lifetimes, Jeremy. I cannot recall this ever being as bad as we are here. Is this strategic on behalf of Putin, that he knew that he was just going to drain them dry, knowing that the weapons that we've also reported that Ukraine, there was a sort of a backdoor, out the back door selling off of these weapons, these resources as well, like they're obviously going onto the black market. I mean, what is really going on behind the scenes in all of this? It is just an absolute debacle, and authority and trust in this system is at an absolute low point here.
Oh, it's the worst we've seen in our lifetimes, Jason. In fact, probably no matter how old you are, who can remember a military debacle that what we're seeing right now, and so much corruption, so many lies. I mean, what we're seeing right now is just unheard of. So we just have a complete leadership failure at the highest levels in all the key countries, in the so-called land of the free, in the United States, in France, in the United Kingdom, and of course our own country, Australia. I mean, there's just a complete failure of leadership, Jason.
Yeah, this is something that many of us have obviously suspected, and it just seems to tie in with all of it. And the news today that Elon Musk has come out and said that there's been election interference from Twitter itself is an unbelievable admission, and it only goes to show that the trust here is just falling through the floor at all levels. And we used to talk about the idea that that soon they won't be able to walk in the streets, and we're already seeing that now. That Bill Clinton, who we just learnt that's tested positive for COVID, is being heckled basically everywhere he goes now. And there was even a quote in a news article the other day when someone asked him about Pizzagate or something like that, that he said, "Well, come back to my house and have a look around." Like, he's starting to answer back now, which is truly extraordinary that we're at this level in the game, that it is falling apart. So the main thing is here that we keep a close eye on all the facts. The COVID stories are also coming out thick and fast. We've got more to say about that. But Jeremy, brilliant report, and I look forward to catching up again on Monday. But have a wonderful weekend, and who knows where we're going to be on Monday. I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, Kate Shouten is here with the breaking news out of Victoria, the seat of Mulgrave, where she's been on the ground looking at the count. This will be a preliminary report, but what she's got, you do not want to miss. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Lynn Shaw is talking about.
Children today are the currency. They're eyeballs online for marketers. They're information. Today, children are the product, and they're being attacked on every front. Although there are a lot of organizations, nonprofits, a lot of good people, and in the government, and we're working so hard on laws and legislation, in the meantime, you cannot sit back. It's 2022, almost 2023. You have to step up. You have to protect your vulnerable children and grandchildren, and you all have to participate. The days of doing nothing, dropping the kids at school or on the school bus, and then that's it for 6 or 8 hours, over. Over. Because we have a complicit, I dare say, I'll go for it, government, definitely complicit media, complicit Hollywood, and our schools and medical community seem to be riding this wave of child exploitation. They want a lot of gender talk, but they do not want to talk about internet safety, something that is surrounding all of us because we all live now in this digital world, and that's okay, but let's leverage it for good.
Lynn Shaw and Lynn's Warriors on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
The left want to control what people say and think. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Coming up in the program, we're going to have Joe Nova, science presenter, on the program shortly. In the second hour, Darren will be here. Darren from Plymouth, he's got a report, an official report, that the UK are now admitting that myocarditis is much higher than they expected. And following Darren's report, financial whistleblower Trevor Kitchen, who blew the lid on some manipulation in the Swiss franc, will be here with his story as well. It's truly the best time in the world to be listening to TNT Radio, bringing you all the hot stories. But there is nothing more pressing than what Kate Shouten is about to tell us. She's been on the ground in Mulgrave in Victoria. And what's going on in the election? Kate, welcome back to the show.
Oh, so good to be back on the Channel of Freedom.
Goodness, good on you.
Do we need it? Do we need it? Holy doolies. The People's Republic of Victoria quite literally landed. Just had my partner pick me up, like, yeah, literally fresh back and safe in New South Wales. Let's build a wall.
Wow, it's that bad, is it, Kate? Tell us what's been going. Firstly, tell us what sent you down to Victoria in the first place to have a look at the count that's going on in supposedly an election that was already resulted and over and done with. How did you get there?
So my lovely dear friend Emily Coltrane from Voice of Victoria, I think that's a platform you're familiar with. So she's been acting as Ian Cook's campaign manager, and when the irregularities started to pop up and they started to get reports on election night, she reached out and said, "Have you ever seen anything like this?" And I said, "Well, I can't see it, so tell me a bit more." So they started to report to me, "Well, we had ballot boxes opened at a location where the security tags didn't match." And I said, that can happen. I've seen that happen on sort of an isolated basis. And then they said, "Well, we had voters being given instructions," because it was quite a long ballot paper, 14 names on the ballot paper, and Dan Andrews was at the top, of the polling officials handing the ballot papers to the voter and running their finger down the page and saying, "Now you just vote 1 to 14, just vote 1 to 14, running their finger down the paper. And I thought, "Oh, okay." And then report that other areas that had high English as a second language populations voting being told, "Now just number 5 boxes, just number 5 boxes," which of course are the upper house instructions, not the lower house instructions, and on and on and on, and ballot papers that weren't initialled by election officials, and sort of on this went, and it gets progressively worse as I'm going to tell you this story. That's the small stuff. So this was the stuff I was sort of told on Saturday night, and I said, Well, look, I've seen all of those things occur before, but I've never really seen them all occur simultaneously and all in one district. So I got the call up, got the call up to help. So on Sunday, I was in Ian's office and met with a few more people, and I said, you know, if you manage, where are you at? So they'd been in the process of collecting statements and statutory declarations, and I said, okay, you know, community independence, it's a lot of new blood. Do we know what the Liberal Party think? And as you know, Jason, I have a terrible, terrible establishment background. sometimes it comes in handy, because I said to them, look, the Liberal Party will have people at polling booths, volunteers, that will have done the same booth for 20 plus years. You know, their mum and dad, you can always rely on to do a certain school and whatever. I said, what did they have to say? And I said, I'd like to hear from them. So we then spoke with the Liberal Party, and they said that sure enough, they'd had people that had done booths for 20 or 30 years and that they'd never seen anything like it. And more to that, what they felt they saw on election day in terms of the voter intention and the attitude of voters going in was not what was reflected when the boxes were open and the papers came out. But it gets worse. So they actually ran out of ballot papers on election day in Mulgrave. You have one job. They ran out of ballot papers.
This is unheard of.
Instead of saying to the voter, look, I'm terribly sorry to inconvenience you, you'll either have to wait here while we get some from another location, or saying to the voter, I'm sorry, you'll have to go to another location, and or just saying to them, look, if you can't vote today and the chance you get an infringement notice, let us know. No, they let people hand write out ballot papers, put numbers on them, put them in the box, and they counted them.
Wow.
It was total chaos at the counting centre. I'm going to say incompetence. It was severely incompetent. They were trying to count papers with an X and then numbers. Boxes were opened in the counting centre that I was present for and did see that came out with no top seats on them. So they just came out bundled for candidates, and the boxes were open. They were bundled in the order of the ones, but there was no accompanying top sheet. So there was nothing to say on election night, we had this many papers and each candidate got this many numbers. But here you go, here's the check count. And I mean, it's just been on and on and on of with this sort of stuff that I've just never seen anything like it. So I could still err on the side of caution here that what we've just got is serious incompetence. But then it was brought to my attention that they're not going to distribute the preferences. And I said, what do you mean? Because it's a compulsory preference of ballots. So here in New South Wales, we have optional preference. Okay, that if somebody's got 50% plus one, I could see it. But they have compulsory preferential. But their act, which has been changed since the Andrews administration, they've been making changes to the act since 2018. And again, I'm not saying it's necessarily where there's smoke, there's fire, but there's a lot of smoke at this point, and that's coming from me, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
If they believe a candidate has 50% plus one, so all you have to do is get over that 50% mark, they actually stop the count. They say that person's won. They don't do a two-party preferred. They don't do it. But yet on election night, they sought to a two-party preferred. So on election night, the commission said the two-party preferred in the seat of Mulgrave will be the Labor versus the Liberal. Now, that's totally normal based on historical data, but you have to get that historical data from somewhere. The only way you would ever know if a two-party preferred has changed in a seat is to count the previous election. And
well,
they're saying they're not going to do that. They're saying we only need to, the purpose of an election count is to say who's won. We know who's won. Dan's won. We don't need to keep going. And I thought this was crazy. I thought that these people are bonkers. And I kept saying that. I said, no, but you've got to distribute these preferences to know who the last two are standing. And they're like, but we don't need to know because we know who's won. And I said, no, listen, counting to a two, if an establishment party is knocked out of the two-party preferred by a huge community independent or by a minor party, that's huge. That informs how the voter feels about that person's viability next time round. Because people like to know their team can win. They like to know these groups can be elected. This whole fear of wasting your vote if you don't vote Liberal or Labor is really real. So you are actively disadvantaging that person to have a second run by not accurately telling the electorate where they ran the first time. That's point one. But point two is that when margins are closed and when politicians have somebody on their heels, there is an impetus then for them to look at those policies of the opposition or of the alternative and say, oh my God, my electorate really care about issue X or problem Y. I better get off on my ass and solve it. And that's part, a key part of our democracy. That is an accurate reflection of how the electorate feel and what they care about. So to completely say I'm going to truncate this process when we've got, when someone passes 50%, that is asinine to democracy. Absolute asinine. And then you could have knocked me over with a feather when they pulled the Electoral Act of Victoria out and showed it to me. And it's in the legislation. The issue is not with the VEC. Do I believe the Victorian Electoral Commission at the moment, for what I saw in Mulgrave, was up that they were up to snuff? No, I do not believe they were up to snuff. However, there's that, and they are also bound by the legislation. And this is the most opaque electoral legislation in Australia. I'm comfortable to say that. It is totally and utterly out of step. And when you add the group voting tickets in and all the business we've seen with that, drain the swamp. That's the point I'm at, is either the people of Victoria are going to drain that swamp, or I'm going to be writing to Premier Perrottet about building a wall. Because this kind of thing is like black mold, and if it's not fixed in Victoria, I don't want it leaking into my state and leaking into every other state and territory.
Well said. And just to clarify, Kate, you have come from big politics, from the big parties, the mainstream. And when we worked together on my campaign, we used to have many debates about the difference between establishment and anti-establishment. And it used to be something that was a wedge, but it was healthy because we got to debate. Yeah. But now what you're saying is that what you've seen in official situations, that it is certainly muddy, it's not clean, it's unclear. And there's a lot more to this story. Let me ask you, what happens? Is there a possibility of perhaps a recount, even though it's 50 plus one? How close is this 50% plus one vote?
At the moment, the commission are refusing to recount. They've actually put a statement out saying there won't be a recount. We believe the margin is sufficient. Now, that doesn't work because, again, if you haven't distributed the preferences, you can't possibly know what his margin is. And at the moment, the last time I looked, he was only about, I think we're only about 200 votes over that 50% for him to declare winning, which is well and truly within the margin of genuine human error. Well and truly within the margin of genuine human error.
Wow. Sounds like your phone's playing up there, Kate, but this is just something else. We've lost Kate there. Wouldn't that be a typical way that this would go in the world that we're in at the moment? But we're going to go through to the news, and when we come back, we're going to have Joe Nova, science presenter, writer, speaker, and former TV host, author of The Skeptic's Handbook with over 200,000 copies sold. She'll be here to talk about the latest as well. So much going on, but that breaking news out of Victoria, That is a story that is only just starting, and we'll follow up with Kate as the story develops. You're listening to TNT Radio.
News doesn't stop breaking, and we don't take a break from covering it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a check of your TNT headlines. The Pentagon has signed a $1.2 billion deal to produce 6 surface-to-air missile defence systems for Ukraine. The US is considering declaring a private Russian security company a terrorist organisation, despite establishing peace in parts of Africa. And a cluster of mail bombs have been posted to various government and military sites across Spain, the latest turning up at the US embassy in Madrid.
In the ambulance, Michael says to me, "Mom, I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And so I yelled, "Help!" I thought I was going to lose him. I'm in the hospital within 10 minutes. He just crashed and was put on a ventilator. They put Michael in a medically induced coma, and they give Michael a 5% chance of survival. Nothing made sense at that point. It just seemed so crazy. I mean, he was fine, and then he wasn't.
Sepsis can cause reduced blood flow, leading to severe tissue damage to arms, legs, and other extremities.
There was no saving Michael's hands or feet. They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee amputations.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more about how to avoid the devastation caused by sepsis, go to sepsis.org.
Look through your children's eyes and you'll see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. When they discover the forest, their imagination is inspired by the smell of pine, the crunch of leaves beneath their feet, the sound of birds calling out for attention. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating forest world. You are the hero in this book. This is a memory being made. This is what they will laugh about years from now. These are the roots, grounding and nourishing them.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Then look through your children's eyes and discover the magic all around you. That's discovertheforest.org, brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Morning, Mama. How you feeling?
Great, and I'm ready for you today.
I'm checking in on ya. Morning meditation?
Check.
Dressed and ready to work out?
Check.
Check your blood pressure yet?
And check.
Boom! Great job, Mom. And about those gold earrings?
No, ma'am.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Monitor your blood pressure daily and help each other stay motivated. Rally your squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back to the program, and we just had some breaking news out of Victoria. That was Kate Shouten giving us a report from the count there down in the seat of Mulgrave, Daniel Andrews' seat. Truly extraordinary. And just to recap, even though Daniel Andrews got to the 50% plus one, there were far too many anomalies that his opponent, Ian Cook, and through Emily Coltrane, Voice of Victoria, the campaign manager there, had contacted Kate and said, this just doesn't make sense and needed some extra advice. Kate went down and had a look. As an expert, been in the game for more than 20 years, and determined, yes, it was certainly dirty, murky, and unapologetic from the VEC, even though the VEC were playing within their own rules. But to have ballots that were literally handwritten because they ran out of ballot paper, to have ballot boxes with unmatching serial numbers, to have them already counted, to have no tops of each of the sheets, to have a two-party preferred system where they don't actually bother to count the two-party preferred. We know from first preference that Ian Cook eclipsed the Liberal, and therefore in a subsequent election, in perhaps in 4 years' time, the seat counting for Mulgrave should therefore be between Labor and the Independent, not Labor and the Liberal, that they're not interested in determining that. So that's a crack in the system itself. And what Kate wasn't able to mention in the time that she had and before her phone dropped out was that the ballot draw system that's normally done manually, in which case what happens is that you have a balls in a barrel and they pick it out and you get determined. This was the first time ever done electronically, and Daniel Andrews' name came and was first on the ballot. And when asked about the algorithm, well, no questions were to be answered on that one either. So it stinks to high heaven, and there's a lot more to this story. Now on the program, I've got Jo Nova joining me. She is a science presenter, writer, speaker, former TV host, and author of The Skeptic's Handbook, where over 200,000 copies have been produced, and the slogan on her website is "A perfectly good civilization is going to waste." Jo Nova, welcome to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program.
Thanks. Great to speak to you, Jason.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you on the show, Jo. Your website is absolutely unbelievably amazing. If it's not on there, it's not worth knowing. I would say that should be the other slogan on the page. But you cover so many topics, Jo, and we're just in a time now that everything that we seem to have believed in the past is now being questioned, and finally we're able to start asking these questions on some sort of official level, but not before people like yourself have been able to put together such an incredible body of work here. And the stories just continue and continue and continue. And even in the last hour, of our program, Nicola Charles, standing in for Mike Ryan, was talking to the lady about this story about New Zealand family ask for unvaccinated blood. This is a massive story that the state of New Zealand wants to go the other way and say, well, we're going to take your child off you. This is unbelievable.
It is extraordinary, isn't it? And fortunately, I was just reading today, there's a group in Switzerland, which I haven't written about on my blog site, but need to. It's called Safe Blood Donation. So it is a group trying to set it up. And apparently all around the world, hospitals are essentially refusing to do anything other than use Red Cross, you know, designated blood. We don't have a free market where you can say to them, look, I've got donors with my blood type willing to give blood free. What I need is just, you know, I'll pay the extra cost, but I just want to be able to guarantee that I'm getting blood, which is, you know, my choice of blood. And the advice that this group called Safe Blood Donation based in Switzerland are giving is to make a living will, which suggests that you want, for personal reasons, you want to be able to arrange your own donor, and not to mention vaccination. This is the sad world we've come to, where they're actually advising against you saying anything about vaccination, because once you suggest you have concerns about it, then you're put on the kind of, you know, bad list, the naughty boy list. But isn't it extraordinary? And only recently you were able to do this. You could bank your own blood before an operation. So this was a kind of standard procedure in hospitals all over the world, but somehow it's disappeared in the last 3 years. You've got to ask, what is the motive behind this, that it would be so easy to solve the problem for this little boy, Will, who's 4 months old, who needs heart surgery in New Zealand? They could solve it so quickly. There's already 20 donors on the list willing to give blood that the parents are happy to accept, and yet they're going to push it through court. These poor parents, they've got twins, I believe 4-month-old twins. They must be so stressed, and they're having to fight for custody of their own children just to get a medical treatment of their choice. And it's just hard to believe that the New Zealand health system is choosing this path where they're going to forcibly try to get custody of a baby so that they can do the surgery the baby needs. Everyone agrees the baby needs this surgery, but instead of just arranging for it, which they could do, pushing it through court.
The outcome, obviously, if the child is firstly taken from its parents, the stress on the parents and the sibling, the child itself, and should it be given what I would call tainted blood that's been vaccinated and mRNA gets into this child's body, if it's having this type of operation, and the outcome that we can only imagine will not be the one that we're looking for. I can't imagine the amount of anger and frustration and what goes from that point there. It is just truly astonishing. And yet all of the things that we're brushing over in all of this is bodily autonomy, that somehow you can't have personal responsibility over your own body. The government knows best. The slogan "My body, my choice" should be burnt for all to hell from now on. It should be illegal to make that comment when you're talking about abortion ever again. The hypocrisy is just beyond belief. And what is a vaccine if you cannot criticize it? And the idea, therefore, that vaccine uptake has now just become, because they're saying it leads to vaccine hesitancy. Well, big deal. But we now have
It's too late for that now. With the latest surveys, we see that people are starting to question all vaccines. Surely it's not in the interest even of Big Pharma to keep pushing this down the track, hoping that somehow they can make all these problems go away. I mean, all of this just makes everybody who's aware of it surely question everything that we're being told on this topic, which is, it is extraordinary. Why the drive here to push these, to not just solve the problem quietly in the background, which they could have done?
Yes, indeed, and you're right, because the vaccine hesitancy, if anything, it's going to go the other way, and it's obviously going to expose many, many other problems. I mean, my skepticism started, I think, when the idea was that when it was off limits, I could never understand why you couldn't criticise. And I remember early on in the piece on social media bringing these subjects up, no more than questions, Joe, not statements, not presenting arguments, but just asking a question: why can't we talk about this? And I remember getting drowned out at the time when I actually could get an audience and traction on social media before I was put into the 90-day bottom of the news feed, you know, basically in perpetuity, like many of us who commentate. And I remember being whacked over the head by people that I'd been to school with, that we'd had many debates, and they just jumped on you. And then the movie Vaxxed came out, the one that in fact Robert De Niro originally was setting up through his Tribeca Film Festival. That's when that film first came out, and then it was vilified, the Andrew Wakefield film. And of course, that was just too much for me. I had to go and watch this film and see what it was all about. And I was truly astonished that it was primarily about recorded conversations between Wakefield's team and the CDC operator that kept taking case data out and reducing it to pull away anyone who'd taken MMR and had now been diagnosed with autism. And yet, fast forward, if you pick up an insert, which anyone can Google right now, an MMR vaccine insert, and on it, it will say, may cause autism. And yet, if you say that anywhere else but on TNT radio, you pretty much go to media jail for the rest of your life for saying something that you're simply not allowed to say. Not that it's not true, you're just not allowed to say it.
And it's truly spooky. And can I add now that we've crossed so many lines in the sand in the last few years, that lines that we never thought we'd cross on so many topics. But I believe it does help to understand so much of this is being driven behind the scenes by groups with just what I call unguarded money. That's where people have put money into retirement funds and they don't actually know where that money's being used or where it goes. And so I put out a call to everyone here listening today, find out where your super is, where your retirement funds are, because it may be being used against you. And that's where we reach a topic you are probably familiar with BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street and in fact, all of those large financial asset managers who have joined climate funds, so they're quite open about it, called GFANZ, G-F-A-N-Z, which is a Glasgow financial group dedicated to arranging net zero. And that, you know, manages some enormous, we're talking 100 plus trillion, mind-boggling, absurd, obscene numbers. To put that in perspective, the entire GDP of the US, I think, is 23 trillion. So we're talking about combined funds of a cartel of financial institutions, which is five times bigger than the US GDP, dedicated to arranging net zero, which is almost never voted on in terms of, say, a referendum, where people could actually choose to not get net zero. Because we know if you put it to the punters and you ask people, do you want to pay more money to change the weather 100 years from now with solar panels and wind turbines and based on the best guess of climate models that we know don't work, we know which way they'll vote. So I just want to point people to this because to me it's actually kind of good news to understand where this is coming from. And when you look at the giant funds like BlackRock, we see that we are waking up to the fact that BlackRock takes pension funds. It is about an $8 or a $10 trillion fund itself. And it is leaning on so many groups. And it throws this enormous weight of saying, well, I manage, you know, $8 or $10 trillion worth of funds. I'm not sure which it is at the moment. But they manage that and then they threaten businesses and they say, you know, we'll pull our funds out. And because they're so enormous, what business wouldn't be afraid of being, you know, if quietly behind the scenes, if BlackRock was saying, you know, you have to do net zero, you need to do this, or we'll pull our funds out, if that is happening, then what fund wouldn't say, oh, okay, we'll go with that, because we couldn't bear to have all our loans called in, we couldn't bear to be dropped off your list, we couldn't bear to have you pull your shares out of, you know, sell your shares, our price will dump. So you think the enormous power behind Larry Fink, who runs BlackRock, and that behind the scenes, this explains why a lot of media companies and other groups may do things that otherwise seem utterly incomprehensible. We're living in such an absurd world where nothing seems to make sense. And I think, to me, this is the connecting factor behind it. And we need to train people to start asking, where are my super funds? Are my super funds being used as part of this? Because remember, BlackRock doesn't own $10 trillion worth of funds. It manages them, but it doesn't own them. What it has is a lot smaller, more like 1% of that. But it gets to walk in there and say, well, we're going to pull all these funds. It controls those funds, but it doesn't own them. So what happened, which I reported on last night, was Ron DeSantis in Florida, governor of Florida, has said, well, enough's enough, and they've pulled $2 billion worth of funds out of BlackRock. Now, $2 billion is a small number out of what is an $8 or $10 trillion fund, but the principle is what matters here. And if we get enough pension fund managers saying, well, no more, we've got to take our funds out, then BlackRock will magically lose that intimidating power that it has. And same for Vanguard, State Street, you know, other large asset fund managers. And West Virginia's already done this a few months ago. They said, well, we're not going to support any firm which has a policy that is boycotting fossil fuels, West Virginia being a large kind of fossil fuel state in the US. And so they ended up with five names of firms that they said no part of the West Virginia government will support, endorse, invest in, put funds in these five companies, which I think included Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, one of the Morgan, JP Morgan or Morgan Chase, one of those, and BlackRock. And so, you know, the beginning of the pullback has come as the world wakes up and realises that what I call unguarded conglomerate money is being used against voters to get policies the voters never voted for. These are legal companies, the coal companies, the gas companies, they're legal yes. operating companies obeying the law, and yet BlackRock and others are coming along saying, well, you know, you can't invest in them or you must punish them or they need a net zero policy, things the voters haven't asked for.
Yep, we have to pause for a break, Joe, sorry, and we'll come straight back and continue this. Are you listening to TNT Radio?
United Nations climate activists and delegates at the summit in Egypt chow down on gourmet meat while telling the rest of us to eat bugs.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
According to a report in the UK Daily Mail, officials and delegates at the United Nations Climate Summit were able to dine on an array of pricey meat and fish dishes served up during the conference. Angus beef medallion with sautéed potatoes, creamy salmon. The pricey menu did not go unnoticed by animal rights activists. The Animal Rebellion replied that this was a slap in the face. These world leaders need to look like they believe the rules. And Animal Rebellion added, quote, this just looks like do what I say and not what I do. So the next time the United Nations or the World Health Organization is telling you to eat the bugs, just remind them that hypocrisy is live and well at United Nations climate summits. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Classes are fun here. I am learning about my culture.
Since 1927, St. Joseph's Indian School has provided children the education, health care, and support they need to succeed. To help give our kids brighter futures, learn more at stjo.org today.
My neighbor is so excited, he just filled up his gas tank for $28. The bad news is it was his lawnmower.
I got the high.
This sucks.
High gas prices blues.
Come on, man.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the program. I'm here with Jo Nova, whose website, joannenova.com.au, is a treasure trove of information all in one place. And Jo, we're talking about the idea that Ron DeSantis out of Florida has divested $2 billion from BlackRock, which hopefully will be the beginning of holding these enormous financial conglomerates that have created hive-minded investment that you don't really have a say in, that literally governs policy. And in all of this, we notice that the other side of this coin is the whole FTX story, the great collapse in what looks like to be another Ponzi scheme inside a Ponzi scheme. And so it is that these huge organizations tend to be literally too big to fail, and the authorities, just the regulators, just don't want to know about them. And yet all of this reeks of what must be part of what needs to be an antitrust investigation at the very least.
Absolutely. The words fiduciary duty and antitrust are totally where it's at. And, you know, I also think a lot of this comes back to just the fact that we have these fiat currencies. People need to understand that the money is created from thin air. We give the right to do that to these central banks and other banks. And people need to understand this system because we have created money out of thin air. I call it just fake money. I mean, obviously it's real money. You can can spend it down, you can buy a toaster at the shops, but who gets to spend that money first? Who gets the right to make that money? If I made that money from nothing, I'd be accused of counterfeiting, but it's the banks that can create that money through a loan system that do that. And I believe it's kind of the root of a lot of the corruption that's around. The more funny money, fake money, money from thin air you have, that's keeping interest rates low so that they can do quantitative easing and printing. It feeds this corruption. It's easy money, and those who are well connected to getting those cheap loans are able to take advantage of it, whereas the hard workers doing the hourly wage stuff, they're the ones who get their purchasing power stolen.
Yeah, indeed. That's so true. We had Tim Price on the program yesterday from Price Value Partners, a finance organisation out of London, UK, and he calls quantitative easing nothing more than the Ponzi scheme in itself.
So we get these FTX and other Ponzi schemes. They wouldn't be possible if there was a much tighter requirement on this ability to just print money.
Indeed. Now, what's interesting about this is that we now extend this concept now to the United Nations listing the Great Barrier Reef as endangered. And this goes straight down the follow the money trail. Explain what's going on here, because this is what I would start calling is the beginning of the climate industrial complex MO.
Well, again, we get the UN, which is a body that no one here can vote for, get rid of. There's no accountability for the UN on virtually any topic apart from what the media applies, the mainstream legacy media, and we know that they all love the UN and won't criticise it for anything. And we know that President Xi, the Communist Party of China, manages to control the UN in lots of ways and through, you know, gifts to small states, the Belt and Road Project and other things. But here we have the UN telling us that our reef, the Great Barrier Reef, is at risk, is in danger. Maybe they're going to list it. So they're holding out this threat of listing it as endangered, which will hurt the tourism industry, probably, where people will say, oh, well, I won't go see the reef because it's all bleached now. And so they have this power. We give the UN this power. And in response, the Australian media, the Australian government are not saying that for the last 2 years running, the Great Barrier Reef has recorded a higher level of coral cover, according to Ames, than any year before that since 1986 when they started doing the surveys of coral reef cover. So the reef is healthier by that measure than we have ever seen in our recorded history of it for 38 years or whatever. So the crazy thing is the UN is threatening us with listing it as endangered, which is obviously nonsense. But it's the UN power to threaten this that makes the government, you can hear Tanya Plibersek's response to this, was, well, it's all right now. I mean, they've only been in government since May. Oh, they've solved that problem, which was a Liberal Party coalition problem, because they've put money in and created net zero requirements and targets and all that. And so, blah, it's solved. And it's like, well, they've done absolutely nothing to solve any problem on the reef. There is no problem on the reef. And Tanya Plibersek is effectively telling us all that the UN is satisfied if you just put in your climate money. It's just like blood money, isn't it? Just pay your climate money for various causes and the UN will go away and be happy.
It's what I would call government tribute. It's nothing more than now a mafia, the whole story.
Exactly, yes. So the UN is threatening us in order to get us to pay money for the causes it wants. And then look back to what I would call foreign interference. The UN is effectively saying Australia needs to have a net zero policy. It needs to throw money and subsidies at wind and solar. Who's going to benefit from wind and solar? Well, the renewables industry will, which is largely China selling us solar panels and wind turbines that we don't manufacture here. It also cripples our energy system, which is an energy security problem. Boy, that kind of suits China too, doesn't it? And we end up losing manufacturing and energy security to China. And gee whiz, it's, you know, thank the UN. So this decision only makes sense if you look at who's benefiting from that money flow. And I should add, there's another benefit too. All that money that goes to support the renewables industry. Renewables is, of course, uncompetitive in any sense. That's why it needs a subsidy. So it's one of those self-evident truths. If the renewables industry could compete, if it did produce useful energy, they wouldn't need to pay the subsidies and it would just be like mobile phones and the internet. It would take off on its own.
Yes.
So we end up supporting these industries because they will always be cheer squads for big government. And you can look at the Greens' decision on nearly every topic. When they say they're worried about CO2, do they do things that cut back CO2? No. They choose things which increase the size of government. And only picking energy sources which are dependent on big government is part of that. They never choose nuclear. They never choose programs that actually reduce CO2. They choose things that make big government bigger.
Yes, indeed. And if you want to get rid of climate change, probably the best thing you could possibly do is get rid of government and all the hot air. It's about the only thing that seems to be heating up as the rest of the world seems to be freezing in all of this.
Actually, we saw that with the US. And when the US didn't agree to the Kyoto Agreement and wouldn't do those targets, they got shale gas. And by boosting their shale gas, they reduced their CO2 emissions. So the one country that didn't sign up to Kyoto and so-called targets reduced their emissions more than most of the countries that did sign up, and they ended up doing wind and solar, because, of course, wind and solar don't actually reduce your CO2 emissions very much.
And there it is. We've run out of time, Joe. That's Joe Nova, her website, joannenova.com.au. Check it out. It's been wonderful to have you on the program for this short interview, and I would love to speak to you again in the future. Have a wonderful Christmas. We're already at that stage in December. We're going to take a break and go to the news, and coming up in the next hour, Darren Denslow with some hot breaking news, and Trevor Kitchen, financial whistleblower from Switzerland. You don't want to miss that story. You're listening to TNT Radio.